This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Play, a leading game developer providing player favorites to the most successful brands across the industry. With an award-winning multi-product portfolio of slots, live casino, bingo, virtual sports, and more, Pragmatic Play is powering up new possibilities of play through one single API. Visit pragmaticplay.com and discover your favorite every time.
All right, so Magnus, I want to start off on the Formula One front today. You recently set this massive partnership with Haas, and I looked this up a little bit before, just because I'm curious to understand numbers and so on, because Formula One is definitely not a cheap partnership to set. And like usually with these type of partnerships, you're looking at like partnership at the cost of like 50 to 100 million euro for these like multi-year deals. You know, without I know you can't go into specifics here, but is it really those type of numbers we are talking about here with this partnership?
Yeah, that's ballpark correct. If you look at, we signed a minimum five-year agreement as a main sponsor of a Formula One team. And yeah, and then you end up with numbers like that.
It's
you
do, yes. Tens of millions of euro.
Yes, yes. But you know, that's for a multi-year contract. And this obviously it contains a lot. I mean, it's a,
you would hope so. Yeah.
It's a massive. It is an investment, and when we looked at it, and we looked at it very, very close. First of all, we felt that we've been underinvested in marketing since the pandemic, basically. And that was more or less a conscious decision. We were looking for a way to reach a new audience in a new way and to connect Play and Go properly with entertainment. Mm. And Formula One, we had a couple of other options, but you know, Formula One, at the heart of it, it's entertainment in a highly regulated environment.
Right.
And that's a perfect match for Playgo. It's a perfect fit. And the innovation and the technology, it's so exciting. So combine that with that, we're underinvested, we want to do something, and we find this, you know, it's almost too good, the fit. So it, at the end, it was... You can't say it's an easy decision when it's that type of money, but
you had to read the contract.
We had, we read the contract a few times. It made a lot of sense to us.
This must be one of the, or maybe the biggest B2B industry sponsorship that's ever been produced. We're talking tens of millions of euro here, right? Like 50, 100 million, whatever the number is, somewhere in between there. Like how, as a B2B brand, because Formula One is obviously a mass market enterprise, and they are reaching and touching, millions and millions of individuals. And so traditionally you would see B2C brands that participate in these type of sponsorships. Yeah. How do you ever recoup that type of money as a B2B partner?
Yeah, that's what we have to do now. So first of all, it's demand generation. I mean, we want potential players of our games to actively look and seek out Play and Go games, obviously. We also want operators and others to feel good about being connected with us, and we can use it for hospitality and bring customers to these. And these are events that money cannot buy.
No.
It's not for sale. You cannot buy these tickets that we now have access to. So we look at it from hospitality, what we can do with our customers and our customer's customer. And also branding. You know, what do we want Play and Go to stand for? And what do we believe? And how do we communicate that to the industry, but also outside of the industry,
right?
And then it made sense.
Yeah, you know? Because it's becoming more popular now in the last couple of years for game suppliers to try to reach the players directly as well, right? Especially with so many games that are being produced in the industry today, that it's not enough with the operators promoting the games themselves? Like, maybe you want to create a demand from the players to ask for the games as well with the operators, right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, our customers, they do a really good job in, because most of our marketing is done through them.
Right.
And they do that really well.
Yeah.
But of course, we want PlayNGo to be a household name. We want it to be known. And that's, you know, for players, but also you can look at it as an acquisition tool for, you know, to hire new people to grow, continue to grow PlayNGo as a company. And just make it known what PlayNGo stands for, what we believe in, and how we look at what we do and the industry we operate in.
Right.
And so we wanted to get that story out.
Yeah.
And there's many ways you can do it. You can do it with industry events, but then you don't reach outside of the industry.
Right.
You can do it by sponsoring, you know, a football team, or we sponsored an ice hockey team in Sweden.
My nemesis. My nemesis. Every time I go to the PlayNGo offices, I mention my favorite team, which is Tingsryd, the big rival. The big rival to Växjö Lakers.
Yes. So that's the reasoning behind it, and we're super excited, and we are getting so the support and the engagement from the Haas Formula One team is outstanding.
Yeah.
It's it's shaping up already to a fantastic partnership.
Yeah, can you talk more about the partnership itself and what goes into creating good value from a massive partnership like this? I imagine that it's not only about the logo and the car and how many tickets you get to distribute to your partners and so on. Can you talk more just like how is it to work with Haas and what goes into things? And you were in Vegas recently for the Formula One race. You know, like, how was that experience?
So I've been to a few Formula One races before, but I mean, coming as their guests. Like that, it's a privilege. You get very close to the team. I don't know if that's because Haas is like a family also. Literally as a family. They had their wives and kids there. So we get the exposure and we get the tickets. But we also get access to Gunther Steiner, to the drivers, Kevin and Nico, to other people, key people in their engineering team. We can invite them to customer events or to industry events. We can have discussions on the importance of innovation, the importance of letting technology drive, and how you always stay on top in a highly competitive environment. So there's many synergies that we can bring Haas into our customer conversations and our industry conversations.
You have to ask as well, you know, like, is there like a Haas game or the Formula One slot in the making here perhaps as a part of this?
I'm pretty sure we're going to do it, but there's nothing in the roadmap right now.
Right.
But I agree. It's open goal.
Exactly. It goes hand in hand. Yeah. It's interesting because say in this case you feel that you're underfunded on the marketing front, and
not anymore.
definitely not anymore. You know, and then as a result of that, you know, you just turn up the heat to the next level. And you have this like pot of money that you can distribute. And at the same time as you chose this huge investment into Haas, you are also not exhibiting at ICE, for example, which is like part of this, like perhaps like being a bit underfunded on that front or whatnot. Can you talk about the fact that you know you are investing huge amounts of money into Formula One to kind of now go full force on that side, but at the same time you are choosing not to exhibit at ICE, for example? What's the reason behind that?
Yeah, so we had a big booth at G2E in Vegas.
Right.
So we do industry events as well. I think with ICE, we felt 2020 that. We did everything right. It was And ICE has always been a fantastic event for us. We have done so much business at ICE, and we have, you know, lots of our success has been built through ICE and other industry events. And 2020, we felt like we can't do it. You know, how can we be? How can we do this better? It can be bigger, but what's the ROI of that? And is that really the right way to go? So we took a step back and said, okay, let's take a pause on exhibiting. We are sending more people than ever to ICE and other events, so we're still present. Yeah. We have meeting rooms, but we choose not to have a booth. It's been 2 or 3 years now when we haven't exhibited at specifically at ICE or any European event, actually. That might change. You know, we evaluate this all the time. But now, you know, we are entering the US market. That has been a main objective for us for a year and a half now. We wanted to invest in that big time. We also see Latin America. We need to boost our presence there. And yes, PlayNGo has grown, but we're still like 700-800 people. We can't do everything. No. You cannot do everything all the time. And you have to prioritize and pick and choose. And so now, for now, we've chosen to invest in a Haas relationship. We invest in G2E. In a couple of other industry events, we frequently pop up at you guys in Valletta,
thank you
New
very
York.
Much. Yes. Thank you.
We like those events a lot. I think where we can have a proper business conversation and do a keynote or panels that make sense, where we can convey our message and feel that it's more than just socializing. Yeah. That is definitely where we want to be and have to be, I think.
Right.
And then you have the branding part. That's always important. And maybe, you know, maybe we should go back to ICE. I don't. There's nothing that says that we can't.
Right.
But right now, this is how we look at it.
Right, yeah. Right. If Alex Pratt of Clarion is watching this right now, just I'll send over Magnus' email after this. Don't worry, we'll make an introduction here.
We talked to him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let me ask you a question that you can't answer, Magnus. So you know, I follow the stock market movements quite a lot of the industry, and we have a couple of publicly traded game suppliers in the industry. That are always hungry to pursue growth through M&A.
Yeah.
And PlayNGo seems to always be at the top target to as a company to acquire by some of the major game suppliers. You know, this frequently shows up in discussions around Evolution, what's the next company to acquire, Light and Wonder, so on and so forth. PlayNGo is always the company that is being discussed as the next acquisition target. So the question you can't answer is, have you been close to being acquired by, say, Evolution or anyone else? Is that something you think about internally to perhaps make an exit one day?
To answer the second question first, I think it's the responsibility of any leadership team in any company, in any industry, to always look at stuff like that. Is there something to acquire? Should we do a merge? Should we go public? I think that's part of running a company, to have those conversations internally. That said, I joined PlayNGo January 2018, and since then people have told me that, you know, you will soon be acquired.
Right.
And I can see why, because there's not a lot of. We are a pure slot provider, and you know, people are looking. You know, there's structural deals going on. There's M&A going on. There's few of us left, pure slot providers. Pragmatic, for example, they have live casino. They have a bigger portfolio. We are very specialized. So in theory, we are an easy acquisition to integrate, I would think. So we're probably, there's probably good appetite for acquiring us. Now, will we be acquired or... I've worked with the we have strong owners. Mm. I've worked with them now for 6 years. And this is my personal opinion, but the way they are investing in the company long term and the way they are engaged in the company signals the opposite. You know, they it's as far as I can see from my fairly good position. Mm. There's nothing like that in the no. making. But you know, that's me speculating. It's not. It is what it is. But I don't see any signs of this. On the contrary, I see them investing so much time and energy into the company and having fun doing it, right. loving to do it, waking up every morning and loving the company and the people.
Right. I mean, investing tens of millions of euro into a Formula One partnership doesn't exactly signal a company that is about to be sold.
It's not dressing up the bride for acquisition.
Not dressing up the bride. That's a good way of putting it. Interesting to hear that. So, you know, Magnus, you talked about North America here, and it seems from the outside that this seems to be the big prize for Playing Go. You know, we obviously the partnership that Playing Go have together with us at Next is very US focused, and the discussions we have is always how can we help to promote the brand in the US. Can you talk a little bit of how important is this market for Playing Go if you compare it to other markets globally, and what do you see as kind of the long term ambition in North America for Playing Go?
Yeah, absolutely. So. I mean, we have a goal in the company, publicly communicated to everybody, that we want to be in every regulated market in the world. That's our ambition. Then everything else is just when, how, and priorities.
Okay.
Again, we can't do everything right. at once. So we will be in every regulated market. That includes the US, of course. So we looked at it, and US is, it's in a way gaming coming home. It's so, you know,
like football coming home to England.
Yeah, exactly.
Gaming coming home.
So it is a huge market already, and it's going to be even bigger. So the money is there. There's revenue to be earned in the US. It is, as I said, regulated, and we like that. We think, why shouldn't we? You know, why shouldn't we go into the U.S. When the growth is there? We can earn money, and in a couple of years. So right now, UK is the largest iGaming. Regulation or jurisdiction in the world. In a couple of years, it will be US. Hmm. So it would be stupid not to be present. Then, of course, it's expensive and time consuming.
Difficult.
And the jurisdictions, you know, this Michigan is different from New Jersey, it's different from Pennsylvania, taxes are different. But we're pretty good at that. That's what we do. We are a supplier primarily for regulated markets, and we handle that pretty well internally.
Yeah.
So we are good at entering new jurisdictions.
Yeah.
So for us, I think everybody struggles. You saw Kindred the other day.
Right.
They gave up. I can understand that. You know, how long should we take the course? But again, we have maybe a 5-year, 10-year plan for the US. It's not, we are not quarterly driven. We are not publicly traded.
Right.
So our plan is very long term.
Right.
And it has to include the US. Yeah. It just has to.
And you've gotten to that size now as Plaingo, where you know you're 800 employees, you know, massive turnover in the company. That you must be talking internally about this other route, perhaps of an IPO eventually, you know, to go public, raise more money, you know, invest even heavier into the new emerging regulated markets and so on. Yeah. Is that ever a consideration for Plaingo to go public?
Again, I think every company has to look at it, and but no, I again, I'm not an owner.
Yeah. So what are the pros and cons? What do you say?
Yeah, the pros are you get money.
Right. Yes. That's a good thing.
Yeah, you get a cash injection, and you can do acquisitions.
Right.
And you can do other things. But we can do the stuff we want to do without going public.
Right.
I think that's the way I look at it. We can do the Formula One.
Yeah, and shareholders will not like ask you twice about this investment.
No, there's very few shareholders, and they are fully on board.
They are fully on board already. It's a couple of people rather than a couple of thousand of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So back into North America again, Magnus. How would you say, as a game supplier, to establish yourself in US? What's the difference in landscape between Europe and North America? How much more difficult is it to establish yourself in the US? And what are the different dynamics here to become successful in Europe versus US?
Yeah. So from a regulation perspective, it's difficult. It's cumbersome, and also it's new for them as well. So, for example, game certifications and stuff like that, it takes a lot of time because there's a backlog. Getting your license can take months and months of just waiting.
Right.
Because they have stuff to do and there's a queue.
Yeah.
So it's time consuming from that perspective. You can plan that. You can say, okay, let's go into New Jersey, then Michigan, then Pennsylvania, then we do this. Figuring out hosting alternatives different from state to state. Again, you can plan it and you can execute on it, but it takes time, it costs money. The interesting stuff is, and that's different from in Europe, we use Amazon Web Services, we use the cloud services for wherever we can. In Europe, that's accepted. It's okay. And we know how to do it. It's easy. US is a bit more tricky. They want local hosting stuff. So that takes time. That's different than Europe. And also the operator landscape is different. You have the way they distribute licenses is... in New Jersey, you have to have a land-based casino, and then you have skins that you can sell or rent out to operators. So you need to learn that as well, how to deal with that. And it's different from state to state. Or again, you just have to invest time and people and money into it. Content-wise, I think that's the area where we've been surprised, I would say, most. They are not that used to online casino as Europe. They play land-based mostly. There's a land-based audience. So if we look at the games that really work in North America, it's the games that worked 2014, 2015.
All right, more rudimentary, simpler games.
And for us, our portfolio, we have a handful of games from 2014, 15 that are very inspired by land-based.
Okay.
And our game development has kind of moved away from that, and the games become more complex, and we utilize stuff that you can do online that you can't do in a land-based casino, which makes the games different. So we actually had to go back and you know, fire up those games from 2014, 15 again to target a certain part of the audience.
Right.
But then you also have positive stuff like the IP games. We have ZZ Top and Kiss and a few other American bands that we made games with. They work better in the US than in Europe. But that's a different audience.
Yeah.
So it's been lots of lessons learned when we navigate how to pick content
for
that market. And it was not what we thought it would be.
Oh. And so so yesterday, for example, Magnus, we were at Idle together, Idle, and Angus Nisbet was on our table as well, the VP of Gaming of BetMGM. And, you know, I can imagine someone like him getting a huge amount of requests from a huge amount of game suppliers and other partners wanting to be a part of it and so on. And the Americans seems to be a lot more relationship driven in their approach to which partners they work with in general when they do business in comparison to Europeans, which are more product focused, let's say. At least that's the feeling that I'm getting. When you do business with the Americans and you try to establish yourself with the BetMGMs and the DraftKings and the Caesars and so on, have you found any resistance in the sense that Playing Go is not really a traditional American brand as opposed to like Aristocrat and these like classic land-based brands? Like, do they look at you a little bit suspiciously when you try to explain to them that you want to be a part of their portfolio?
So now, Pierre, now you answered your first question. Why did we sponsor Haas? You know, again, that's spot on. We need to make Playing Go known. But we've been many, like BetMGM, for example, they brought over Europeans that we've known for years to run the iGaming part. Many of them did that. Some did not. There's not a resistance, but but it's, we are not a household name for an American who's been in land-based casinos and all of a sudden his boss tell him, you know, go do online. Then they will go to IGT and Aristocrats and say, what do you have on online content? Do you have that? Give me that.
Yeah. Yeah. The relationship is there.
Yes.
They trust each other.
So. Yeah, I think we would all do the same, I think, because it's quick and easy. But you know, they've been open. They don't say no to meetings. They do some research. They figure out that, yep, Playing Go is actually fairly big in Europe, and they got good games. They want to learn. We do demos, we go through our portfolio, they like it, and we build that relationship. But it's a longer, in Europe, we don't have to do a company presentation because people know us and our games, and that's not necessarily the true truth for every American company. So yes, there is more work, more selling, more you know, basic selling to be done.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah.
So here on the European side, Magnus, if we look at kind of like share wallet and movement and so on for Playing Go, it seems like the share wallet and operators for Playing Go has decreased somewhat over the last couple of years, but it also seemed to be for the case that, you know, we are sitting in two very comfortable chairs here,
yeah.
Branded Pragmatic Play, that happens to have done incredibly well over the last couple of years and kind of taking a bigger and bigger share of wallet for the operators at the expense of everyone else, it feels like. Does that feel like a threat to the business? How do you view these massive companies now, Pragmatic Play, Evolution, obviously, are trying to acquire their way into a bigger share of wallet as well and kind of take more control over the partnerships with their operators? Is this becoming a bit of a scary kind of landscape to navigate with the bigger getting bigger?
Not scary, but I think you need to have strong and good competitors. Because if you don't, you're probably in an industry that's dying, because if you're the only one who's investing in it and no one wants to be there,
yeah,
you're probably making something wrong.
Yes.
But to have competitors like Evolution, Pragmatic, and the other, and others, it's a good thing because it makes us better. But of course, we are competing against them. Yeah. And I think Pragmatic is, they do some things really, really well. And same with Evolution, they have some obvious strengths and stuff that they do fantastically well, and I admire them for that. And I think, and also it's good because it drives us to be better. competitive wise, we are a supplier that's very, very focused on regulated markets, and so we compete with the ones who wants to be on regulated markets, and let's focus on that. And the way we compete is by being a very good partner to someone who is in regulated markets. We have all the licenses, we have all the paperwork, we have we follow the jurisdictions. We are often the first supplier who updates the games when there's a change in regulation. That's our way of competing. Pragmatic has a different way of looking at the market, and they are addressing a different market share. Their market is slightly different. They do things different than us, which is fine. You know, that's their company to run. So I'm not worried. On the contrary, I like it. I like to compete with good companies, I just look forward to make Playing Go better and better on what we want to do and drive our strategy, and let that take us to a better place.
Yeah. Every successful game supplier seem to have this like one hit that is almost funding the company. You know, NetEnt and Starburst is a good example. Obviously, Playing Go with Book of Dead, that has constantly for almost 10 years been, you know, the top three game, and obviously it's generating a huge amount of the company's revenues. So even though you are producing one game a week, at the end of the day, it is this like one game that is contributing to a lot of the bottom line.
Yeah.
How scary is that, you have a game that is so important for the company, and the success of this, the continued success of this game, determines a lot of kind of the bottom line of the company? And how do you produce a new Book of Dead?
Yeah, well, that's many questions in one.
Yep.
first of all, it's so Book of Dead is a big game for us. Obviously, it's not as big as many think, but it's huge. And looking at the revenue generated by Book of Dead, has been, you know, growing at a certain level, while the rest of the game, the revenue from all the other games are growing faster.
Okay.
So our dependency on Book of Dead,
right,
is getting less and less for every day. Every day, in reality, I would say that we have maybe 6-7 games that stand out in terms of that they generate more revenue than most other games. So you have, yeah, Book of Dead, obviously, Reactoons, and Moon Princess, Rise of Olympus, Tomb of Madness. Yeah, there's 8-10 games maybe that are really strong for us. And I think that's also a strength of Play and Go, that, as you said, most suppliers have one or two games that they live on, while we have 8 or 10. So I'm not worried at all. Of course, and can we create a new Book of Dead, or Starburst, or can anyone do this? I think it's very hard, because what, in October, there was, 3,000 games released. When Book of Dead came, 2016, Starburst about the same time, I think. I was not in gaming but then, but I've gone back and looked at the numbers. It took almost a year for Book of Dead to really catch on. And during that time, it was every welcome offer and every promotion ever anywhere was on Starburst and Book of Dead. That's the two games.
Those are the two ones.
You know, month after month on every casino, everywhere. Can you get that type of exposure today? Yeah. I think it's very hard for anyone, you know, regardless if it's Play and Go or Pragmatic or Aristocrats or whoever. I don't think you can get that type of exposure for one single game anymore. Now, if I look at the value for us, it's not in a single game anymore. It's in the portfolio. The value of the portfolio is becoming so important. We have 300 plus games in the portfolio. We're launching one game every week. And we could do, if we only did five reelers with Egyptian theme, that would be a pretty useless portfolio. But now we have grid slots, we have innovative slots like Honey Rush and Diamond Vortex, we have classic slots like Jolly Roger or Feline Fury or Legion of Gold, and we have our sagas, the Rich Wild series, the Reactune series, King Arthur, etc. We have the IP games, the music games. So we have a very broad and diverse portfolio with high quality games. This means that if you're an operator, you can differentiate your offering towards other towards your competitors by using games from that we release and from our from our portfolio in a different way than others do. So we offer our customers the opportunity, if they like, to use our games as a differentiator. They can differentiate against competition and they can differentiate against markets. So if we launch four games a month, they might say, we're going to push this game in Latin America and this game in Italy and this game in Sweden. The portfolio becomes more valuable than a single game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think as well about differentiating yourself and expanding your products? You talked earlier about Play and Go being a very focused company only on RNG and slot games. You don't currently offer live games, for example. Is that a consideration for the company eventually as well to expand into live now that you have reached like the size of the company, you have the kind of the financials to back a launch like that up?
So we did a venture into land-based with William Hill in UK. So we
you built the cabinets.
Book of Dead, actually.
Yeah, there you go. Of course,
works well. So that's an interesting experiment to see what we can do in a land-based environment, and let's see if we do more of that. But live, it's so people heavy, you know. It's tempting. You could acquire something maybe. Right now we don't have any plans for it, but you know, it would be nice to give Evolution a run for their money and see how much damage we can do. You know, I would like it, but right now it's as far as I know, there's nothing on the table. But
It's getting tough as well in the live landscape, right? There's I think off the back of Evolution's market cap, a lot of investors for a lot of game suppliers. We're perhaps asking a lot of these game suppliers to like, why don't you do something live? And we are seeing a lot of suppliers popping up now, all competing for the same space, you know. And it's it seems to not be that easy for many of them.
No, I think it's tough, and also we have to, we have to also realize that evolution does it really well. You know, it's not like they're not exactly failing.
No,
you know?
No, not exactly.
So you need to do live, and you need to do it better than evolution.
Yeah,
and that's a challenge.
Yeah, not a bad one, that's for sure. You mentioned Magnus, maybe enter the live space potentially through an M&A in the future or whatever. Do you see growth through M&A as a viable thing for Plengo? Because I don't think yet you have done any M&A so far, right? Is that something also you're looking at? Like, have you looked at this in the past? Have you been close to acquire anyone at some point?
Not as far as I know. But I've, it's been discussed on a very high level. But the thing is, so far we've ended up with that we've grown this company organically, with maintaining a healthy margin, producing high quality games, increasing the production year over year, organically. And it works. It works really well. So why change? You know, it's kind of there we ended up so far. But yeah, again, this isn't a question really for the owner, so it's more me speculating here. But I think continue to grow the company organically looks like a really good idea.
Yeah, it's been working well so far.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you announced quite recently that you just broke the all-time high, right, for amount of game rounds in one single day. It's like 250 million or something in one day.
Yes, so rounds and active players has a phenomenal growth. The reason we look at that KPI is because when you invest in regulated markets, there are stuff, regulation sometimes impacts bets and GGR. You know, what is the max bet and deposit limits. So typically you have, for example, when Sweden or Netherlands regulated, we drop 20-25%, and then it takes a while to build that revenue up again. But if we look at rounds and players, what that tells us is that, okay, there's more people enjoying our content, players, and they do it for a longer time, and that rounds. And actually, if you look at bets per round, if you kind of look at that KPI, if that goes down because rounds goes up, that means that in some way we have succeeded, that people are using it as an entertainment tool more than a betting tool, which is what we want. Which also means that, we might not be maximizing the revenue, but we get the money that we want to have. The good, the good side of the force, if you like. It's so rounds are important for us because that and active players are important for us because that, and then revenue is always revenue. But if we look at rounds and players, and if we drive that, then we know that not only are we probably making more money, but we are making money in the way that our strategy is devised, and it means that our strategy works. That's why, that's why we like that KPI. It proves our strategy right.
Right. It's more sustainable growth.
Exactly. Yes.
All right, Magnus. So I saw today that you just announced a new initiative that I thought was really cool, the Playing Go Music.
Yeah, Go Music.
Go Music. I thought that was really wonderful because, it's really underestimated how much incredible music is being produced in games these days. And I think from what I understand at Play & Go, this has been one of the kind of KPIs for, one of the USPs for Play & Go is the music production in the games, right? And I remember not only the music that you produce in-house, but also through collaboration, you mentioned Kiss. And I remember when you brought Sabaton over here to Malta, that was a fantastic event, you know. Can you talk more about the initiative of Play & Go Music and why this is important to you and why you focus so much time and effort on the music of the games?
Yeah, first of all, I think the audio and video are so connected, and having the high quality of a game is not only the graphics and the mechanics and the math. The audio is the music, and the sound has to be really, really good. And we've always liked to work with audio and make that a strong part of the game. So Go Music is, it's much more than just a playlist. It's a collaboration platform where we have artists working with us, doing versions of the music, creating music inspired by our games, and they can upload it on this collaboration platform. And it's almost borderline a record label. So we can bring in new talent and promote them and help them promote. We do it because A, we like it, it's fun. B, we have a lot of good music that it can be used standalone outside of the game. It's that good. And it also underlines that what we do is an entertainment product. And we can show that by showing the quality of the music and offering that music as a standalone product outside of the games. So we're super proud of this. And we think it's so fun and so energizing to have this. And if you go in, if you dig into it, you'll see that, I mean, there's lots of suppliers who have decent music and they have a playlist. But this is, and I can't stress that enough, it's not a playlist. It is a platform for collaboration where we can bring in artists and creators of audio to collaborate with us and to share their music and get a new audience for their product, as well as we get a new audience for our product.
Right. How do you see this long term than playing out, Magnus? I mean, you talk about the platform here that you are trying to create and to try to get new artists to produce music and variations of the music and so on. Yeah. Like in a couple of years' time, what is Play & Go music going to look like?
Yeah, let's see where it takes us. But we are going to invite more and more artists to collaborate with us on this platform. And obviously, if we can use this in the games in a good way, then that's good both for us and the artist, right? And if we can get some more high profile names to work with us, again, you know, the marketing we discussed in the beginning, it will certainly help us those conversations. And we do good music games. We have proven that. So I'm not 100% sure where it leads us, but it can only be good, you know.
Exactly. You mentioned earlier before we started to record, you know, in the Formula One event the other week with Haas, there was like Paris Hilton and Brad Pitt, and then obviously Magnus Olsson was there as well. And maybe this is a good place to attract some new artists into Play & Go Music. Another reason to spend tens of millions of euros here.
Yes.
Amazing. Magnus, if we look at I'm curious to know, you know, since you're not publicly traded, it's really difficult to understand kind of how the company is performing, what you do well, and so on, other than the information that you talk about in these type of interviews. I'm really curious to ask you just what you can say in terms of the company's growth year over year, Or if you look at kind of the where the company is today compared to a couple of years ago, do you see steady growth year over year? I mean, not to ask too many questions at once here, but I know that Germany was a really important market for you guys, and obviously since the regulation, this must have been a really difficult time for the company to adjust to the regulation in Germany. And can you talk a little bit more like how the company is doing year over year, let's say?
Absolutely, yes. So I don't know really where to begin, but let's let's start with Germany. Yeah, when they regulated, I think we lost like 60% of our traffic or something.
Oh my God.
It was, and that was our biggest market. So
wow.
We had growth that year despite Germany.
Despite Germany?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we picked that up elsewhere, but not nearly what we would have if the German regulation had been done in a different way. So what happened was that the regulation drove, the way they did the regulation and the way the regulation is, drives people to unlicensed casinos. Because the user experience, the player experience in a licensed casino is not good enough with the limitations that regulation imposes on us and on the operators.
Right.
So you drive players away from the licensed casinos. We removed our games from... So we put Germany on prohibited jurisdiction list in all our contracts.
Wow.
Which means that you have to have a license.
Yes.
To be able to offer our games. So all regulated jurisdictions are on the prohibited jurisdiction list. And in the contract it says that you cannot offer our games in this unless you have a license. Like in Sweden, like in whatever. I think that's kind of typically what company, I think that's industry standard. I hope so, at least. And we sent out letters to people saying remove our games if you don't have a German license. Now, unfortunately, they had the regulation was, no one really understood when it started to, is it active? There was some transition regime. I don't know all the legal details there, but it was messy. So people interpreted it differently. They said, no, we can offer games through unlicensed because of this and that. And no, an MGA license still works in Germany. And others says, no, it won't work. And we wanted to be on the safe side. And others didn't.
Yeah, to say the least. Yeah.
So we ended up with that. At the same time as Germany regulated, Netherlands regulated. That was much more, we saw a typically, 15-20% drop in traffic. That always happens. And then we can build that up again. And that worked as planned. So Netherlands was a good regulation for us. It was exactly as we planned and expected. Germany wasn't.
Right.
So that's, and I'm still vocal about Germany needs to do something about their regulation because it's not good for Germany as a country because they are losing out on tax money. It's not good for the players because they are driven to unlicensed casinos. It's not good for operators and it's not good for suppliers. No, there's no winners here. That they, I hope they change. Going back to Play and Go. So, yeah, we have growth year over year, mostly in regulated or only. We grow in regulated markets. That's where we grow. And we're also working with pre-regulated markets, much like Entain, for example, or others. So Finland is a good example. We offer our games in Finland. We know they're going to regulate. By offering them there, we can have a conversation with operators and other, regulators and or whatever, on how to move into a regulated space. So it's important to be in pre-regulated markets as well. And it works. We have growth. We're doing well. We could... I really want to grow in a way that's sustainable and that's good for the industry. I want to wake up in 5 years, 10 years, and go to work in an industry that's healthy, respected, that adds value to the community, that adds value to the investors and people who are working in the industry. And I want people who work for Play and Go and for the industry to be proud, you know, that working in iGaming, remove the stigma. Let's make it a fun, entertaining, and good in place to be in. I really want that. And to get there, we have to do certain things. You have to stop doing other things. And I think embracing regulation, working with the regulators to make the regulation better, and having a vision for where do we want this industry to be in 5 years, 10 years? How do we get to a point, or how can we continue to grow healthy, and healthy also for players and for governments? I think that's the trick. We could probably go much faster if we disregarded those things. But, you know, we don't want that. And we're still growing healthy, so it's a working strategy. And it's also a strategy that makes me sleep very well at night.
that's important, right?
For me it is. Yeah. And for us at Play and Go, it's important.
Because you have this... you have this emerging trend of the operators that are operating outside of the regulated landscape right now that are just absolutely exploding, right? Mm-hmm. Like huge companies that are forming, that are taking alternative routes to create revenues. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that it's really, you know, you see this like shining kind of like massive hypergrowth part of the industry, and to have the discipline to say, like, we're not going to go down that route, we're going to think long term, it's not easy.
It's both easy and not. It's easy when you embrace that moral or ethical position, and not to be some kind of trying to preach something here, but if you have that vision, what do we want the industry to be? And you realize that if we want this to happen, we have to leave, you know, we have to say no to certain parts, certain revenue. But the goal is much more profitable long term than the short term gains of this, because if we drive the industry in the wrong direction, we will end up with more regulation, more bans, more political interference, more discussions on responsible gaming and the dark side of gaming, and that will long term be detrimental for all our revenue, not only Play and Go but everybody's. So it depends. What perspective do you have? Do you have a quarterly perspective? Yes, you're probably very tempted to go for that revenue. If you have a 10-year perspective, it makes perfect sense to say no to it.
Right. In the lead up of this podcast, I did some research and I asked people of the industry what is interesting to know out of Play and Go. And one thing that came up, I think, more than anything else was the fact that Play and Go doesn't offer bonus buys in your games, and you mentioned that you get this question every day, right? And so it's a very popular emerging trend right now that that you can just buy yourself straight into the bonus game, and some games are made specifically to maximize this feature. Money Train comes to mind, of course, of Relax and other games as well. But you guys don't offer bonus buys, which seems at surface that it's like a feature that is just missing. Can you talk about Why are you not offering bonus buys in your games when it seems to
Yes,
be
sir, I
something that the
can.
players really want this function? Why don't you give it to
Yeah. I've had this conversation a few times. So, what we create is an entertainment product. The game is an entertainment product in our world. It's not the gambling side is the icing on the cake. It's the thing that makes it a bit edgy. But we want players to play our games because they are entertaining, thrilling, exciting, fun, good audio. It's an experience. To then say that, okay, we are also going to offer a functionality that you can skip 9/10 of the game and just jump to the end and just play the bonus part. That makes no sense at all. Let's make the base game exciting. And if you offer bonus buy, what you're saying is that my game, this game, is a product for winning or losing money big time. That's not our message. That it's so far from our message. It's just not what we want to do. We
But if
want.
the players want it, Magnus, if all your players come to you and they really want this bonus by feature, like why not give it to them?
Because then, why not try to convince them to, or try to get them to play a game that's really fun from start to beginning? And if they want high volatility and they want to win big, they can. They can adjust that with bet levels and they can play games with high volatility. To skip a big part of the game that we spent a lot of time developing, it just doesn't sit right with us to have that mindset that let's jump to the part where we can win and lose big. So from a creative and from a product creation perspective, super easy to do bonus buy, and we can just add that feature to any game, but it doesn't make sense from a strategic perspective. Then, responsible gaming. Bonus buy is, in my view, a predatory functionality that exhausts players and empty their wallets. I would like to see data from operators on people who turn off their account and pauses their gambling. What was the last game they played before they did that? I haven't seen the data, but I can guess. And also, I think if you walk into a store and you're going to buy something, if you leave the store feeling cheated that you lost money, will you go back? No. If you leave the store, you spent some money and you felt this was a good experience. Yeah, I spent money, but I got good value for my money. Then you come back. If you play games that are created specifically to make you bet a big amount and lose, because the RTP is always under 100, no matter what it is. And if the game is only designed to empty your wallet, it's not a good experience and you don't want to go back. And I think this is a case of quick wins now that will come back and bite them later.
Right.
So I don't believe in functionalities like that. I know there's an audience, I know people love it, especially seasoned. Gamblers like it. And I think we should do other things instead. I think, and I know what we are going to do instead, but I won't tell you yet. I will show you in a while.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
I'm looking
Yeah.
forward to that, Magnus.
Yeah.
But like the fact that bonus buys is becoming as popular as it is, does that mean that it perhaps opens up for a new type of game that is kind of like let's say like longer game rounds that as a standard feature, which makes the each spin more exciting, for example. Isn't that just proof that that is something that players want as just a standard
but
feature?
let's create the games like that instead.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I completely agree. I think there's a generation of players coming now that they want action from the first spin. Something needs
right.
to happen.
They don't want to wait until maybe 1 hour later they enter.
If you do Starburst or Book of Dead, you have to do a couple of hundred rounds.
Yeah.
And that's how most of us who are listening to this, that's how we play.
Yeah.
But there's a new generation. You know, if nothing has happened in 5 or 10 rounds, it's a
boring game.
Boring game.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be in game. It could be stuff. In things that move happens. It's many land-based games have actually features like that. That I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
So I think instead of doing bonus buy games, let's do games that caters for that audience but are less predatory.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a great way of saying it. And it seems throughout this conversation, it seems very much that. The direction that PlayNGo is taking is this sustainable path towards a more sustainable future. As a company, you recognize the challenges that the industry has, and instead of going for quick wins and for quick money, it seems like you have adopted this more long-term thinking and what you see as more ethical and so on. Interesting.
I think I don't want to play the ethical card too hard. It's there, and I'm proud of it. But it's also a business case that if you want to build long term, if you want to build a successful PlayNGo for 5-10 years going forward, which is important not only for the owners, but for all us working at PlayNGo, that the company is healthy and it will stay healthy. If we want to do that, we have to think like this. We have to think about what kind of industry are we going to have, if any, in 5-10 years.
Right.
So not thinking about it would be stupid.
Good point. Magnus, let's start rounding off a little bit today. I have two more questions for you. First and foremost, which is your favorite game studio not PlayNGo?
Probably, I like Elk a lot.
Elk,
like magnificent games. I like to play them. I think everything they do, I've been impressed by. I really like No Limits. I don't always like. I don't like every game, but I admire them a lot for. They choose a niche. They choose a strategy. Let's do a bit. Edgy, controversial games, and let's do them really well. So they've chosen a niche, they have a strategy, and they are executing on it. And I admire that ability to differentiate so clearly and find a niche that no one else has, and then really execute on it. I think that's good leadership, and it's just a it's a well executed strategy, and I always like to see that. So then some of their products, some of No Limit games, I didn't like that much, but that's my personal opinion. Others I've played a lot. So it's Elk, No Limit, and then there's individual games. So there's a couple of old NetEnt games that I keep returning to that I like a lot. There's a couple of land-based games, older, that I also like a lot. I've been spending some time in Vegas, so I've been spending way too much money on the casino floor. The Game of Thrones games is Game of Thrones. I like that. It's well done. They figured out in the bonus round how to keep the anticipation. That's super important in a game, I think, and they really. Nailed it with that game. I think that's good. So there's many.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's yeah, yeah. It's good to have, you know, it's good to have all this content around us. So,
yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. I always go back to my goldfish 3-slot in Vegas. You know, 12 years ago, 14 years ago, when I started to go to Vegas, that was front and center on the casino floor. Yeah. Now the goldfish is kind of in the corner somewhere, but it's always there and it's always available. You know, it's always free when I come to Vegas. So that's the one I go back to. It's
it's funny that the games you played.
Yeah.
A long time ago, if you had a good experience,
Stay with them forever.
You stay with them.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm loyal to the goldfish until the day I pass away. I can tell you that, Magnus.
Yep. I have a couple of games like that also in Vegas.
So, Magnus, last question for you today is, you know, where do you see playing go in say 3 years' time? Like now, as you go forward, now in the next couple of years, how do you see the company progressing? Is it just to kind of keep pushing? North America is the most important market for you guys. What's the strategic focus? Where is the company in 3 years?
In 3 years, I think North America is at least 25% of our revenue.
And today it is approximately?
I know it's not even. it's very low right now in revenue.
Low single digits.
But the growth is phenomenal, but you know, it's low, from a very low number. So I think we will grow in a market that is growing. So that's like a exponential thing. And I think we continue to mature, and I think we will have at least one more vertical somehow, if that's land-based or something else. But I hope so, at least. I think we are going to see AI impact production of games in a major way. And I think that will change stuff. I think unregulated, you know, Curaçao will be gone.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I think so. No matter what you think about it, but the way they struggle with banking and all that, you know, it's
transactions are becoming more difficult. Yeah.
So regulated, I think our business will be like the big chunk is going to be regulated. There's not going to be a lot of pre-regulated markets. I don't know if it's 3 years or 5 years, but somewhere there.
The trend is clearly moving towards that direction.
So I think we will also be an entertainment company. We have Go Music now, we have the games. We will have other things that underlines the entertainment part of our production. And I think the organic growth with AI and automation, I think we can churn out a lot of high quality content in a very efficient way. It's going to be exciting to see.
Okay.
Will we
see a playing goal sponsoring Ting Shui's RF? This is where I'm going as well in 3 years. This is the whole conversation had led to this question, by the way. I'm trying slowly. I'm trying always to get playing goal in there as well.
I'm not sure we can afford Ting Shui.
That's the thing, especially now after Formula One as well. It was either way, but Ting Shui or Formula One. But
maybe you picked the wrong horse to bet on.
I'll keep pushing. One day we'll see playing
never,
go on
never,
the shirt.
Never give up. Never give up.
Magnus, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. And to quote Carolina Pelk earlier today, she said she didn't have that much feedback to give of questions to us to dive deep in Playing Go, but she wanted to say that Magnus Olsson is my favorite person. So I'll throw that in there as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Carolina.
Thank you, Magnus, for today.
Thanks, Björn. Thanks for having me.
Let's take the weekend now.
Yep. Thank you.
thank you.